Welcome to episode 28 of BioRossi's Few and Far Between podcast. I'm your host, Chris O'Brien. As we continue our third podcast season, we want to spotlight innovators in the clinical trial industry, especially companies focused on rare disease research. I'm here with Dr. Mark Gass, VP of Program Development and Partnerships and head of the Rare Disease Center of Excellence at BioRossi. Last year, Mark had the chance to speak with Dr. Alok Tai, founder and CEO of a company called Vibe Bio. Welcome back to the podcast, Mark. Tell us about your conversation with Dr. Tai.
Thanks, Chris. Dr. Tai's vision at Vibe Bio is built on the hope for potential treatments for rare disease and other disorders. He and his team are building a community where all participants, from patients to scientists, are part of the decision-making process. And by adding innovation to the methods for funding for the studies, such as through DAOs and cryptocurrency, he's making it his mission to ensure that realization of these clinical trials for all stakeholders. While Vibe Bio is new to the drug development and clinical trials ecosystem, their philosophy of patient-centricity and community, putting patients over profit and politics, is definitely energizing for the industry.
Thanks, Mark. That sounds fascinating. I'm sure it's going to be a great episode. Okay, let's jump in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Few and Far Between, conversations about rare disease research. My name is Mark Gass, and I have the pleasure today to have with me Dr. Alok Tai, founder of Vibe Bio. Hello and welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a really great pleasure to be here and share with you a little bit about what we're working on.
Very excited. This episode actually follows very recent episodes that we also recorded along the lines of rare disease and DAOs and how this is now disrupting the industry or helping a little bit create new avenues to push forward rare disease research. So we're really, really excited to continue getting a little deeper into this topic and understanding a little bit more what's going on behind the scenes. But before we get into the details of that, we always like to start knowing a little bit more in depth who our guest is. And so I'd like you to explain to the audience, you know, who you are, how you've gotten where you are, and you know, a little bit of your background.
Sure. As hopefully the audience knows, my name is Alok Tai. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Vibe Bio. My background is actually as a scientist. I spent about 15 years at the bench doing research, then caught the software bug and started a few software companies focused on the biotech industry. Those companies have raised over $100 million in venture, have a few hundred employees, and are doing pretty well. But then last year, my wife and I were fortunate enough to have our first child. Though the pregnancy went okay, unfortunately, our daughter was born very sick and spent a long time in the hospital. One of the hardest parts about that experience was that the diseases that she had were actually somewhat common. The biology was well understood, but there were no dedicated therapeutic options available to her. And as a consequence, she spent a long time suffering. I think it was from that experience of seeing her suffer along with the other patients and families that were also in the NICU alongside us, made me rethink my priorities in life. And I decided to leave to start Vibe.
I would say it's a common theme, you know, obviously me working on rare disease, talking to a lot of patient advocacy groups, parents, caregivers, even people on the biotech and pharma side, we come across similar stories very often. Right? Parents or family members that were somehow sometimes involved, sometimes not in the science community, tech community, they have to push forward the research for, you know, their loved ones because either there's no, you know, funding or there's no, you know, therapeutics or there's not even a diagnosis for that disease, right? So it's probably too often common of a story, but it always seems to lead to great work that would have not been done. So I think that's a little bit of the light, right, within the darkness of the suffering and you know, these scenarios that you guys, you know, happen to live. Also, it's always great to talk to a former research scientist. So I understand, I think, a little bit of the journey, and I'm sure a lot of people listening will too. That seems to be, right, the initial steps towards the formation of Vibe. Can you tell us a little bit how that project comes together? And sort of what's the, you know, hypothesis that you have coming into this? If it's more sort of helping on the science side, funding side, you know, what's a little bit of the different hypotheses you have when you start to, you know, brainstorm on, okay, I'm going to do something that ended up being Vibe Bio.
For sure. And this became a common theme that we saw across many different organizations and many different disease areas. You may have seen recently that RareX published a report citing that there's over 10,000 rare diseases that they've been able to catalog to date. And that number continues to grow. So it makes sense that, you know, unfortunately, with the volume of rare diseases and the genetic variation, it's almost impossible for any one pharmaceutical or biotech company to be able to pursue a treatment for all of them. So our ambition was truly to create an approach by which we could serve those other parents and families that were also in the NICU alongside us and empower them with both a community as well as the power to pursue a cure. What we wanted to be able to accomplish was an approach by which we could enable scalability of the participation of those communities such that we can go after those 10,000 plus rare diseases. But then second, coming back to the financing point, recognize we need to bring in a new source of capital to the table to be able to finance a lot of that work because it is, again, drug development. So that was the two constraints or optimizations that we wanted to make. So when my wife and I looked at different approaches to solve this problem, whether it's a nonprofit or a biotech company or an academic lab, we saw that actually a DAO, which is a crypto-enabled collective, was actually the right mechanism for us. And it was that organizational structure, we believe, that first allows us to have the patient at the center. Namely, our core is a community of patients, scientists, and partners who help identify and vet these treatments initially focused on rare diseases, but then finance them using cryptocurrency token sales. On the front end, we're able to accommodate a large quantity and infinite number of patients and scientists and partners at the table. But then also on the back end, we're able to tap a $1 trillion plus pool of capital that allows us to be able to take big swings on high potential projects like a rare disease drug program. So that was sort of the constraints within which we were trying to operate and optimize for and how our DAO and our community started to form and project as a result.
That's really interesting. And I'm sure a lot of the people listening to this have heard or, you know, discussed in some other scenarios the DAO concept or, you know, within the now very popular cryptocurrency space. Can you explain a little bit for everyone what a DAO is and how it fits this environment of clinical research where it's maybe not, you know, the most straightforward relation compared to, you know, financial aspects of cryptocurrency?
For sure. You know, there's so many angles to look at this. Maybe let me take a step back and let me put you in the shoes of a parent who is just informed by their doctor that their child is diagnosed with a rare disease that had no treatment. Obviously, it's a very lonely experience and one that's highly emotional. For many folks, you know, they're relegated to begging existing biotech and pharma companies to work on that disease, obviously to no avail. And then as a result, many have to either rely on the generosity of billionaires or a voluminous number of bake sales to raise the money to actually develop a specific medicine. And in many cases, that quantity of capital and the expertise required is often larger than they have access to as a consequence. So what we're starting to see is an opportunity by which we can actually put this existing model of community-driven drug development on steroids. So if you think about some of the canonical medicines like Trikafta and Orkambi developed by Vertex, much of that early work was actually sponsored by the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, right? A community of patients, scientists who came together and raised money philanthropically to actually fund some of the early work at Aurora and now Vertex. So a DAO has some similar facets where it is ultimately a digital community of participants. The actions of this collective are mediated and governed based on voting of tokens that these community members own. Those are the two fundamental principles of a DAO. So our first round of financing was with $12 million led by Initialized Capital, well-known Silicon Valley VC who's interested in both crypto, biotech, and tech. And we've been able to now to bring this community to the forefront and empower them with this new model of both identifying and vetting drug development programs, but now also a treasury that they can then invest into the specific clinical trial programs themselves. Whereby the longer-term goal is that for these medicines that we're investing in, any successful transaction or royalties that come back to it will then be funneled back to the community to then be reinvested into subsequent programs. So that's sort of how our DAO operates and sort of the key components that manifest it.
You've touched upon a lot of different areas, right? The stakeholders, the patients, the functionality of it, and sort of like the organizational aspect of the DAO as well. Someone may be asking themselves, how is this different than, you know, traditional aggregation and, you know, fundraising, right? Because maybe without having let's pretend we don't know the DAO concept in the crypto token world. And it would be a group of people getting together for, disease of interest, going out there to, the VC that's leading your fundraising effort or some others, get some capital and then organize themselves with some of these foundations to work on this disease. What is the plus that, being organized as a DAO brings to the table, and why you're seeking to do it in a more efficient way than the traditional way, I would say?
Yeah. The models that you had mentioned earlier have certainly developed existing medicines and have been pursued by many companies when you set up a biotech, raise traditional venture capital. The challenges that we've seen, however, is that when you're a venture capital-backed biotech, any rational, reasonable team has to make very difficult choices as to where to focus their limited capital and their novel technology. What you see time and time again, however, is that because those organizations are valued based on the net present value of the prospective medicines they're developing, there is a natural bias to focus on the largest sets of diseases as opposed to rare diseases, as an example. As we've seen with Vertex or United Therapeutics or Horizon, amongst others, there are good unit economics in the rare disease space, but because they simply don't stack up to the larger scale diseases that we more commonly know about, they tend to get deprioritized. And since any given biotech company has enough capital and resources to pursue one or two drugs, we just see time and time again that rare disease families end up sort of getting the rug pulled out underneath them when it comes to getting into clinical development. So to bring back to your question about why a DAO, first is that it allows us to bring to the table a nearly infinite number of patients and scientists and partners to help identify and vet these different drug development programs. That can't be done in a traditional biotech. Second is that, so I would articulate that first, we're trying to move the incentive structure away from a purely NPV-driven model to one that focuses on the needs of the community, namely patients. Number two is that it allows us to bring a completely new, highly liquid, large source of capital that's looking to take risk into the drug development space where it can do a lot of good simultaneously. So that's why we see the DAO as a unique structure. And by no means are we looking to replace existing biotechs or biotech venture capital, but simply augment and provide a better option other than billionaires and bake sales for those patients and patient families out there.
So you've mentioned different stakeholders, obviously patients, you guys, as descendant of the DAO, other people participating or vendors, stakeholders participating in the drug development process, CROs, labs, maybe academic institutions. How do you interact with all these different stakeholders? Do you bring them all together as part of the community? Do you manage those interactions? Do you bring different stakeholders in at different stages of the process? How does that work in the practical world?
Yeah, great question. So through our digital means, whether it's our Discord server or social media, these communities actually autonomously connect, members of the community autonomously connect to engage in identifying different approaches for a specific, say, clinical trial or manufacturing, trying to identify potential modalities, right? Or potential repurposing opportunities to take medicines and apply them to other indications. Oftentimes, those who might be good for, say, a decentralized trial might not be great for a trial where, say, intrathecal administration is the ROA, right? So having a variety of different sets of expertise at the table, I think, is really important. And it becomes our job from an execution standpoint to ensure that the best possible science is being selected and funded, but then also the best possible partners are being brought to the table to ensure that candidate medicine has a shot on goal. So I'd say it's definitely one component is highly serendipitous and is part of our mosh pit, if you will. But the other component of it is ensuring that there exists a foundation and a network and a set of resources that one can tap into once a path has been identified and prioritized.
Hi, this is Chris O'Brien, host of Few and Far Between. We'll be right back with this episode in a moment. I personally want to thank you for listening to our podcast. Now, in our third season, it continues to be an amazing opportunity to speak with some of the top thought leaders in the clinical trials industry. If you're enjoying this episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people discover the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to Few and Far Between so that you never miss an episode. One last request. Know someone with a great story you'd like to hear me interview? Reach out to us at fewandfarbetween@biorossi.com. Thank you. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, this is really interesting because you're basically building the entire ecosystem around these different projects, right? You're trying to have the right set of vendors, potential partners to select the right one for the right project and not just sort of force yourself to work with, you know, the partner companies or sort of more of the traditional route that some of these, you know, larger companies on the traditional fundraising 100% have followed.
Yeah, Mark, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, probably from your vantage point, where, you know, someone might have an existing relationship or procurement might have a select set of vendors that they want to work with. And that's all well and good. And I'm sure it works in many cases. But given the diversity of rare diseases that are out there, along with the unique needs of running small scale trials, you want to make sure that you have the best possible expertise along with specialized expertise at the table. So again, whether it's, you know, folks with regulatory expertise or clinical development and clinical operations expertise or contract manufacturing, we very much want to create that ecosystem to make it plug and play for those biotech projects and those patient communities to be able to advance in medicine quickly. I'd also highlight, you know, if I may, that for, you know, the folks who work and those folks on the CRO and the CDMO side, having ease of execution, ease of participation and partnering is probably also a value add as well, where instead of having to have, you know, hundreds of different MSAs in place and NDAs and things of that nature, instead of having a more common streamlined approach that just enables you to focus on the good science, right? And showing your strengths is, I think, also another component of the value add. So,
yeah, no. And in addition, you may have a chance to have an additional benefit to that, which is potentially decreasing the costs of the full life cycle of the drug development. Because, you know, if you select the right partner with the right expertise, you know, you may shorten the time or may shorten, you know, the burden on some of the traditional approach. Could also reduce the overall cost, because it's great to have it easier to fund, but it's also great if you need less funding because the cost of development is less. I'm sure we all agree on that part.
For sure, you know, and I think the other angle that I'd also highlight here, and I'd imagine this is perhaps also part of BioRossi's strengths as well, which is as we start to pursue more and more of these programs within the rare disease space, our hope is that we can also build up a set of best practices and technologies that can help, to your point, expedite development and alleviate different bottlenecks. So I think that's another unique aspect of the DAO, which is it allows that communal knowledge to start to be developed and then potentially also either automated or routinized for the benefit of subsequent projects and programs in the future. So definitely something we're obviously at the early stages of, but see a tremendous amount of potential as we kick off our first set of projects.
No, yeah, absolutely. And speaking with Dr. Jocelyn Pearl in one of the previous episodes, she brought up the concept of the, I think she called it minimal viable biotech or something along those lines. I apologize if I'm not quoting it correctly, but sort of this type of biotech that have, you know, founder-led, a small company compared to traditional biotech environments that develop a lot of these products or initiatives. Is that something that aligns better with this sort of effort, or you contemplate possibilities of partnering with, you know, more traditional biotech companies, maybe smaller companies, just depending on what the asset may be to be developed, what the type of technology science is needed behind it? You know, it will be a case-by-case scenario.
It's a really good question. I think, you know, the tone of our conversation so far has really been about that ecosystem and that community that comes together to support the development of a rare disease drug. And I think, unlike others maybe in the space who tend to, say, vilify the existing sort of drug development infrastructure or biotech VCs, et cetera, you know, I think we just take a more metered approach as parents and families, members who have sick loved ones. You know, we want to be as open and as collaborative as possible, because we believe everyone in the community has something unique to be able to contribute at a relevant point in time. So, you know, our initial focus is to help fund and identify high potential drug development programs in the rare disease space, and really try and transition these medicines from preclinical development into early clinical proof of concept. We for sure feel confident and be able to rally the community to make that possible. However, over time, to get to an approval, it might require either larger amounts of capital, a different set of resources. And so we're very much open to partnering with, whether it's existing pharmaceutical companies or biotech VCs or other sorts of institutions, in order to make sure that medicine has the best shot on goal to get to patients. So, you know, we very much see it as an opportunity to partner and as an opportunity to collaborate across this community. But, you know, more power that we can put in the hands of patients and scientists, I think the better. And that's not just know-how and expertise, but also capital as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we all understand that capital and, you know, fundraising is a limiting factors often for the drug development. However, I think for especially for these patient-led or caregiver-led type of efforts, there's also a lot of uncertainty or a lot of unknown around what do I even need to get in touch with, you know, people in the field? What do I need in terms of infrastructure to support the drug development? Is this something that you, part of this community, also support? So just not only helping on the funding, but also sort of connecting the different dots on, you know, what a group, advocacy group that's trying, what a foundation that's trying to develop some sort of treatment will need to do, what steps they will need to follow.
For sure. We're seeing in the market today a distribution of preparedness of different patient advocacy groups. There are some that have been developing treatments for the past few decades and have now finally gotten some promising compounds that are IND ready, while others, you know, this past year just got their disease named. And so they're trying to understand, you know, some of the foundational pieces of natural history, developing their first registry, et cetera. We certainly want to be a community and an approach by which that entire spectrum of patient community can have access to both community, capital, as well as the power, right, to pursue a cure. So it very much is one that should be open and will sort of grow over time. We're starting, you know, with this translational step and then working our way backwards from there in the drug development process, simply because it'll also, in addition to the focus, it also allows us to be able to identify the best practices for a later stage that you can start to bring into an earlier stage of development. I'm sure we've all seen a lot of other programs suffer in the clinic because, you know, the clinical development team and the early stage research team, right, weren't on the same page about what was important from an endpoint or delivery perspective, as an example. So I think those are some of the challenges we also hope to short circuit as we evolve and grow.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with all the, you know, talking to different stakeholders on different sides, right? When you talk to a CMO of a company developing a drug, or when you talk to a parent of a patient, or when you talk to an advocacy group, certainly sometimes it's difficult to align all the needs or wants or points of view. You know, anything that can be done in that aspect as well will be tremendously beneficial for everyone, but ultimately, obviously, for the patients. I would love to talk about some of the specific projects that you guys may have been working on already. But before we do that, I would like to spend just a couple minutes on understanding how do people get in touch with you, right? If I'm a parent of a child with rare disease, or I want to get involved, whether it's from a, you know, fundraising standpoint, helping in some way, how do we get in touch, or people interested get in touch with iBio, and what are the different possibilities?
For sure. We'd love to meet any patient community, drug developer, biotech company or investor who's interested in the rare disease space, as well as novel approaches like Web3 and DAOs. Easiest ways to connect with us would be through our website at vibebio.com or vibebio.com. Or on Twitter, we're at vibe_bio. So those would probably be the two easiest ways to get in touch with us. And I would love to meet anyone who's interested in this broader space and see how we can help and collaborate.
Absolutely. And I always like to encourage everyone to reach out, because sometimes people think they're, you know, too early or don't know enough, or, you know, are not sure if it's a good idea or not to reach out. I'd say it's always a good idea to try. You have nothing to lose, and there's a lot of good connections to be made and a lot of chances that, you know, somebody will be able to support, or a good initiative will be born, which is, I think, what, you know, ultimately all we all want to do. So some of the current projects that you guys may have been, you know, building or working on, I think would be a good idea to show some, you know, examples of the work done, because that always helps everyone to understand a little bit better how this works. So I would like you to share some specifics maybe of some of this work that you guys have been already performing.
For sure. As part of our launch, we are really excited to also announce two really exciting partnerships with different patient advocacy groups focused on the rare disease space. One is with NF2 Biosolutions, which is focused on a neuro-oncology indication, which is both rare and fatal. The other is with Chelsea's Hope, which is focused on Lafora disease, which is a neurodegenerative disease that predominantly affects children. So we're really excited to partner with these two different patient communities and launch biotech companies focused on those disease areas, and are now actively working on in-licensing intellectual property for both of those programs. So we're super excited to be able to partner with these organizations, showcase the exciting work that they've done to be able to get medicines to the point where they can put them into development, but then also hopefully paint a picture for how other patient communities, as they grow and evolve, could potentially also see themselves in a similar position to advance medicines into the clinic. So we're really excited to partner with these teams and see a bright future for how patients and communities can truly drive the next generation of drug development.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I'm sure these are going to be some of the essential building blocks for the DAO and for this project. It's really encouraging that you guys already have been active in, you know, solidifying some of these partnerships. What do you envision next? I know this is still very early stage and, you know, in the infancy, if you will, of project, but obviously I'm sure you have plans for the future, whether it's expanding the number of partnerships, having more of them with more patient groups, or, you know, being able to push forward some of these developments. What do you see as the future for ViveBio, and how can, you know, people get involved?
It's such an exciting time to be at Vibe today. You know, we're really fortunate to have raised our first round of financing of $12 million led by Initialized Capital. And that's given us sort of the runway and time to be able to build out first our community of patients, scientists, and partners. So you'll see from us hopefully more announcements of patient communities that we're looking to partner with, as well as programs that we're looking to pursue. The second is identifying and collaborating with a much broader group of scientists as we build up our community. You know, we're working to open up our Discord server now to a more open and broader group of individuals. So having that vibrant community help identify and vet potential programs and treatments, I think is going to be another big milestone for us in the coming weeks and months. So a lot of really, really big, important milestones, I think, are upcoming. And we're excited to have such a vibrant community to help make it a reality, as well as invite others who are interested in this endeavor to come and join us.
Yeah, this is a lot of really exciting things. I'm sure you have your days very packed with a lot of activities. It definitely is a really, really exciting time. And some of these initiatives help keep that push for the development in rare disease alive, which is really exciting. Well, you've shared a lot of insightful points during this conversation. I think to all the audience listening, all of those involved in rare disease or being part of the rare disease community probably have a lot of hope, which is a word that you've mentioned a few times, because I think this brings definitely a lot of hope. I think two things that I want to highlight is two things you've mentioned. One is sort of eliminating that macroeconomic aspect, and then so allowing, you know, every disease to have potentially a cure, which I think it's very encouraging. And I think, and then number two, providing that support to all these different communities that may need, you know, they may have the idea or may have the drive, but may not have the resources or the guidance. And I think you guys are building a community that will allow all of them to pursue a cure for those diseases successfully. So I really appreciate your time during this talk. I think it's been super exciting to learn more about DAOs and about the work that you're doing. I'm sure you'll see a lot of new releases from your site, and we hope to see lots of them, because it will mean that a lot of these partnerships are solidified and all of the work is being done. And I'll just hand it over to you to, you know, share some last few points before we wrap up the episode for today.
Absolutely. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be here today. You know, I think to summarize, for the first time, ViveBio is creating an approach by which rare and overlooked diseases finally have access to the funding and community they need to develop a cure. And so in these circumstances where parents and families are reliant on billionaires and bake sales to raise the money, right, to develop a therapy, ViveBio believes there's a better option. And so we're building a community of patients, scientists, and partners to help identify and vet treatments in the rare disease space. In addition to our partnerships with NF2 Biosolutions and Chelsea's Hope, we really hope to enable patients, not profit or politics, to drive the next generation of drug development. And so our goal here is really to provide patients with an unprecedented level of ownership and control over the process to hopefully bring more medicines to market for rare and overlooked diseases. So would love to meet anyone who's interested in that mission, whether you be a patient, a scientist, an investor. You can find us at vibebio.com and are keen to continue the conversation thereafter. So Mark, thank you again so much for the opportunity here today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tai. And again, everyone listening, please go check out the ViveBio website and their Twitter. Get in touch. We hope to see a lot of very successful news and stories in the future with ViveBio and your partners. Thank you again. And we'll see you all in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Few and Far Between. Our podcast is now available on Apple Podcasts and other major streaming services. Please take a moment and leave us a user review and rating today. It really helps people discover the podcast, and we read all the comments. Those comments help us to make Few and Far Between better and better. Also, be sure to subscribe to Few and Far Between so that you don't miss a single episode. Got an idea for a future episode? Email us at fewandfarbetween@biorossi.com or contact us on our website at biorossi.com. I'm your host, Chris O'Brien. See you next time.